All right, welcome to the game room. We are talking about game theory in this episode. Game theory is actually more about mathematics and business approaches than it is really for video games, but there is a lot to be said about game theory mixed with fighting games. To put it in like the most basic terms I could possibly give you, it's how you think and how your opponent thinks. We talked about a little bit about this when I was doing the Tekken psychology episode, and really this is just a more scholastic view, I guess you'd say, more school-based view of what, you know, what is game theory, what is, you know, the psychology of a video game, what's the thought process or flowchart building of a fighting game, why would you do it? All that comes down to game theory. Game theory is about solving mathematical problems, usually with percentages, that give you the best values in every circumstance, even if it's the worst circumstance. It kind of goes along the lines of what they call chaos theory, where tiny little things can cause huge problems if you let them go for long periods of time. It's a little different than what you talk about as the butterfly effect. It's a little different than that, but game theory is used a lot with games. Good examples are poker and chess. There's a lot to be said about that. Also, the game Go, it's an ancient game that uses almost like a pentate chip type system. But, you know, going into game theory with Tekken or Street Fighter or any of the modern fighting games, it's really about learning the best possible options you have at any given situation. Now, obviously, there are times at any level of skill that you're going to realize you shouldn't attack or you should attack. Times would be like if the guy's on the ground, maybe you should attack. Or maybe you just blocked a whole bunch of stuff. You probably, while you're blocking, you should be hitting buttons. Those are really basic thought processes that go through players' minds at any level that ties into game theory. There's hundreds and hundreds of books about game theory out there. There really isn't one that focuses just on video games, though, and I think that's really a cool nut to crack. I think a lot of people would really benefit from having that, especially in the fighting game community, having a book or a, you know, something, you know, I don't know, an article or something based on this that really focused on how game theory can apply. And it actually would be really beneficial, especially guys in getting out of high school into college that really want to pursue more in college. This would be a great introductory course to look into is game theory. There's a lot of math involved. If you don't like math, then there are books out there that cut a lot of the math jargon out. But you still have a lot of really kind of deep thought about what to choose. And, you know, there's simple examples of percentages of... a good example would be this one. So the Three Stooges, Larry, Moe, and Curly. If you don't know who they are, it's probably because you're super young and I'm super old. But if the Three Stooges were all to fight in a duel and they all could shoot their pistols once, and Larry had no chance of hitting anybody, Moe had a 50% chance of hitting somebody, and Curly never missed, the best option for Larry, if he was to go first, would be to shoot straight up in the air, because he's not going to hit anybody anyways, and Mo would have 50% chance of hitting Curly, and Curly always hits. So I don't know, it's that's one example of a strategy you would use to break out of the best or worst case scenario that there is. I know it probably didn't make a lot of sense, but whatever. If I could explain it in more detail or type it up in the description, maybe I'll do that. It might be 30%. I think Larry has a 30% chance, but either way, it doesn't really matter. The point is that it's word problems and thought-based problems like that they don't really translate well to a fighting game environment. But if you take some of those things out, if you take out the whole thought process of you're in a duel and you're shooting and there's the Three Stooges, if you take all that out and you say, okay, if I'm playing Street Fighter and my guy can do one of three things and the opponent can do one of three things, what are my best options? And if you go to any player's guide for any fighting game that's worth a damn, you should see a glossary of terms. And a lot of them will have terms that you may or may not understand at first, but when you start reading through the glossary, you might pick up on stuff that you hear thrown around that really goes into game theory. A great example is option select. An option select is when you do an action that solves multiple problems. You know, a good example would be maybe there's someone that's throwing out throw mix-ups in Street Fighter. Maybe they're going low or they're throwing. Okay, they don't ever attack high. And they don't ever throw any anti-air. In that situation, your option select would be to jump. Because jumping avoids the low, and you can't be thrown while you jump. So that's a good, simple example of a option select. It's, you know, and there's more to it than that. There's lots of different option selects out there. You know, another option select would be, maybe waking up with a uninterruptible safe attack. You know, that way they can't counter hit you out of it, and you can hit them out of a lot of stuff because it's fast and it's safe. So even if even if they block it and they guess right and they block, you still are not at such a disadvantage to where you're going to get free damage on you. That's a good example right there of a good smart option select. Spacing, another thing. It's not how much space between fonts on a term paper. It's spacing in between you and the opponent. The same term is used in sword fighting. Spacing and grouping and all that is there's terms that go through lots of different genres of sports and activities. Definitely a big one for fighting games is spacing. A lot of great players are out there and they really can't get to the next level, and it's simply because they don't do spacing. They don't space themselves out to where the opponent throws and whiffs attacks or misses attacks. If you miss an attack, you're usually got a lot more recovery and the opponent has a lot more time to react and hit you. So very bad. You don't want to do that. But, you know, going back to game theory, you know, what's the game? What's the name of the movie? I'm trying to remember now. There was a movie where it's a guy from Princeton, I think. He worked in the 50s and he did Perfect Mind. The movie's called The Perfect Mind. And it shows this guy named John Nash. John Nash was a PhD, he's a professor, and he started having schizophrenic breakdowns. And he was one of the pioneers in the Minimax, I don't know what you want to call it, algorithms, I guess you'd say, or equations. And it basically proposed, you know, mutual destruction with nuclear war. And it also did other things that were really prophetic. So things that we knew about before they happened, you know, really hopeful stuff, psychic almost. And going into that whole term, you know, the prophetic, a lot of people in fighting games, they'll watch, and maybe they're lay people, they don't play the game much, or maybe they play just a little bit, and they're wondering how these players know to break a throw at a certain time, or know exactly when their opponent's going to strike or do a specific move. And it's not because they're psychic, it's because they're learned in what the right actions are. And once you start learning the right way to play a game, or for example, right way to play chess, your moves in chess, each piece has a specific move or a specific function. You can bend the rules and use pieces in different ways that an opponent might not expect, but for the most part, there are specific moves that you use for a specific function. And the same goes for fighting games. You know, you're not going to use, like a fireball for a character as your only poke. You're not just going to throw that at zero range on top of somebody. If you're standing right next to the opponent and you're throwing fireballs, you're probably not using that to the best sequence. You're not doing the best sequence that you possibly could. You can use that to end combos. You can do it to space. And you can do it to poke because it's an infinite range poke. It just goes across the map. You know, it's Street Fighter at least. So, you know, There's methods to the madness. There's a reason why some of these great players are great. Flowcharting, we mentioned that earlier. Flowcharting is the act of sitting down, looking at the numbers of your moves, picking out the very best ones that solve the most problems that you could come across against different opponents, and putting in on a piece of paper or on a graph or something. A good one I see a lot of people use is Excel spreadsheet. And they go in and they say, okay, if this happens, then this happens. And it's literally a math equation. It's a math equation that's using moves instead of numbers. So if you, for example, in Tekken, if you throw a jab and they block it, you're at +1 frames. So you can still attack first, even after they block that jab. within reason. I mean, there's other moves that, you know, they might interrupt you if they know you're going to throw jabs, but we're not getting into all that. All we're getting into is the fact that there are flow charts that you can build in any fighting game. Even if you have very low skill, you can still slowly learn how to pick up the best possible moves for each scenario. And through trial and error and experimentation, you can build a very, very good set of moves. Now, patterning, that's not what you want to do. You really don't want to throw out patterns to where the opponent can learn your one pattern or two patterns and pick you off, because there's always holes. It doesn't matter how great your flowchart is, there's always going to be a move that has a weakness that you need to use. Maybe a really, really great move that gives you frames as high. Well, if they duck it, then they launch you, or they combo you, or whatever. Or they can stuff you with a move. You know, maybe a move that's really great is slow on impact. Maybe the startup frames are really long on it. These are all examples of things you can mitigate by doing flowcharting and having the game theory sense in your mind of how to mold your playstyle to make it a stronger playstyle. Does that mean you have to change the way you play as a person? No. Every person's a little different. You can play however you want. But to maximize the effectiveness of your playstyle really has a lot to do with how you use game theory and what your steps are to improve. And it's a really huge, huge topic. It's not something that you can easily cover in a podcast or a program or recording, but it's definitely something that I think a lot of players, especially the younger players, disregard. They don't think it's important. It's a lot of the players, especially with shooters, they really put a lot of emphasis on hand-eye coordination and their twitch skills, their twitch shooting skills. And I think all that fast thinking is not necessarily the best thing you need for a really good strategy base. What you really need is long thinking or slow thinking. And there are a lot of books out there in game theory that manage thought process systems. Like system one would be fast and system two would be slow. And if you look these up, if you look up like secondary thinking or system two thinking, you can find a lot of stuff. I believe one of the professors is Kaufman. And they really go into a couple really great books about how to use fast thinking for everyday life, but also use slow thinking for problem solving and strategic thinking. And it's really good for chess and poker and especially video games, because if you have that framework to use outside of the fast-paced action of play, excuse me. Oh, I'm yawning. Okay. If you use that on your downtime, when you're not actively playing the game against like your rival opponent or someone you've never met before online, instead of you using all your quick thinking skills and trying to build a strategy, you can fall back on a really good, solid strategy that you built up on your own or with other casual players or players that you're more comfortable with, and then use that plus flowcharting and plus problem solving and now your twitch skills to really improve and bolster your game. Now, am I saying that you absolutely need to use a flowchart all the time? No. Some of the best players out there will disregard and throw away their flowchart once they get to a certain level. And the reason that is because other players are doing the same thing. They're all flowcharting. So once you get to the point where you're comfortable with your 10 or 15 moves, like in Tekken, I use probably 10 or 15 moves usually. Once you're comfortable with that, you can really go from there, and the sky's the limit. As long as you're comfortable with what you're doing and what you're planning on doing with slow thinking and fast thinking, you should be good to go. What else? Cards. I mean, just the rationale between game theory and percentages.
I'm tired.
I'm on my way home from work, and it's killing me today. You really have a lot to consider when you're playing percentages. And something that a lot of people, especially younger players again, argue with me a lot, and you guys could always shoot me a line. I'm at michaelwlorenz@gmail.com. You can always send me emails. Or you can talk to us on the stream. I haven't streamed in a couple weeks now because my wife's been sick and in the hospital, but, you know, she's getting better and I'll probably be streaming soon. So that was my little blurb, my little advent there, or a little advertisement. Let's go back into it here. So younger guys, a lot of them will kind of do a tug of war with me and they'll say, you know, I don't understand why this stuff is important. I'm winning matches, I'm beating people, why do I need to do this? And my answer to that is, you don't have to. If you're beating people, your thinking, your critical thinking is probably to a point where it's above your opponents and you're good to go. And you know things that they don't. Having that kind of knowledge, you know, knowledge is power. Ultimately, knowledge is power. If you know a whole bunch about a game that your opponent doesn't, you're automatically going to have a huge, huge gain or huge superiority, really, when it comes to how well you can play the game. Because you might not have the fastest reflexes, but if you know exactly what moves are safe and what aren't, or know what the best juggles are for each certain situation to do the most damage, damage is king. You know, if you can mitigate their damage and improve on your damage output every fight, you're never going to lose. You're always going to do better. So, you know, there's really a plateau effect that you see with these younger gamers. And a lot of them have faster reflexes than I do. You know, I'm a little bit older. I'm 33 years old. I'm not the oldest guy around, but I'm definitely not the youngest. And I still see myself winning quite a few matches against younger players that are much faster at hand-eye coordination than I am. And the reason is, especially in fighting games, is because of the years of experience. You know, you can really transfer these skills from one game to the other. You don't have to just be a Street Fighter player, or just be a Marvel player, or just be a Tekken player. You can really jump around from game to game once you have those core skills. Once you get the core skills down and you understand how to think in a fighting game and you just start learning your characters and their specifics and different things, that's what's going to differentiate one game from another. I mean, obviously there's different mechanics in each game and there's different combos in each game and different things like that, but once you have the mechanics figured out for a newer game and you have that core experiences, the core experiences from other games, you can really improve your game on almost any, virtually any fighting game quite easily compared to someone that's never played a fighting game before. But going back to what I was saying, the younger guys, they have a problem with me. You know, they don't like that. They don't want to be patient. And I'm not saying all young gamers are like this. And I'm not standing on my soapbox saying that the young gamer crowd is bad. They're not. Some of them are really cool kids, and I love them. They're awesome. But you have to understand that it's a different school of thought. These things that I talk about here, they're more of a, I guess you'd say, an older style of how you should approach a fighting game. There's so many different ways to approach a game, and you can go into any forum. You can go into SRK, you can go to Shuriken.com in their forums. You can go to Tekken Zaibatsu in their forums. You can go to, you know, GameFAQs forums. You can go to any different forum for fighting games and ask the question, you know, how do you get better at X? How do you get better at Y? How do you get better at this game? And you're going to probably get a lot of people responding with different things. And it really, if you take all those things, you squeeze them all together, it's pretty much what we're talking about right now is game theory. Character experience and knowledge, that comes with playing the game. And that just means you got to play more. And study right. You know, there's different ways to practice. There's a good way and a wrong way. There's a right way and a wrong way to practice in these fighting games. But conveniently enough, if you follow these steps, if you just work on game theory and the mechanics, the physical mechanics of the game, like spacing, sidestepping, understanding your frames. Now, am I saying you need to count every frame and know everything about every character in the game? No, not starting out. That's crazy. But what you can do is you can focus on which character you really like and then focus on the character you really hate, the character that always beats you and you don't know why. By looking at that and experiencing the moves, visual representations of the moves over and over and over again, getting hit by the moves all the time, you're going to start training your eye and your hand-eye coordination and your muscles to react to these moves. Especially like me, I hate Bruce. I don't know why. I like Bruce. I play with Bruce a little bit, but I hate playing against him because he always seems to hit me with shit that I know is coming. Back two, all the time. Crouch dash 3 or 4 all the time, back forward 3 all the time, just catching me with the silly stuff, and it's just because I haven't trained myself well enough to understand when to block and when to punish and stuff like that. And that, and does that make me a noob? Yeah, kind of. I don't really know that much about Bruce. Can I get better at it? Hell yeah. You know, and it just comes down to experience, getting better at the game. We typically talk a lot about Tekken on here because that's the game I mainly play with people. You know, I play other stuff too, but I mean, this game theory, the game theory hypothesis, if you want to call it anything, the hypothesis that game theory melds well with fighting games and shooting games, it's been around a long time, and it's really sad to me that there's not more people in the FGC or the fighting game community that follows this or explains it well. Now, maybe I'm just living under a rock, and there are great people out there and great gamers out there that have talked about this ad nauseum, a whole bunch. They talk about it all the time. Maybe. But I don't see it. I don't see it a lot in forums. I don't see it a lot in magazines. I don't see it in books. And in the one or two books that I have seen, they're not really great sources. They might be MIT. They might be, you know, Princeton, Harvard. I don't know what college they're at. I don't know what school or university they're from. But they don't have the same demographical impact and the cultural impact that players within the fighting game community would have outwards. You know, a lot of people, they attach names and faces to who's great. You know, like competitive gamers, people that are in MLGC, people that do Evo all the time, the big tournament there, people that do like League of Legends and other esports. You start attaching names and banners with great plays and smart plays. And I think the more that we start exposing game theory and the mathematical side of things, the percentages, towards games like this and the social structure and hierarchy of how to get better, I think we're already going to see players improve much faster and in different levels that are different from what people are used to. People are used to seeing people play hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours and hundreds of matches or more, and they improve and then they become good and competitive. Whereas you could still do that, you could still play all the matches and put all the hours in, but you could probably exponentially improve multiple areas of your game, multiple facets of your game, if you just, you know, work with flowcharting and work with friends, work with competitive people around you, and work on this whole game theory sense, thinking slowly and methodically about what the best choices are against certain characters at certain times. Now, a lot of this is stuff that you don't really need to explain. A lot of good gamers and good players will figure out just by playing the game, wow, this character has X, or this other character has Y. I should figure out what I should use to stop it or make that less reliable for them. And that's great. That's exactly what you need to do. That's perfect. But at the same time, you know, there's a rhyme and a reason for it. A lot of players will do the bare minimum to get better and beat an opponent, and then they plateau again. And then they need to be beaten by somebody else with other characters for them to improve that area. And you see this stepstone, this staircase of trials and tribulations. You know, good things happen, bad things happen. Good things happen, bad things happen. It just slowly builds up the staircase while they overall improve and break that plateau for them. And what I'd like to see is more players band together and work as groups to try to improve. Because then you've got entire communities getting better. And that's really what the fighting game community is. It's groups of players that are competing against other groups and other individuals in their own groups to get better. Shit talking is a must. It's got to be in there. It's awesome. It's funny. Do you need to do it to brand new players that aren't any good? I don't know. I don't really agree with that 100%. I think if you're established and you're helping other players and you want to goof off and joke with them and talk shit, that's fine. But if you have to have a positive, impact on people in your that are directly, you know, viewing what you're doing, I guess you'd say. If someone sees you somewhere and they are not in the community, they don't know who you are, and you're being an asshat, it's probably not the best appearance to make. You know, first impressions are huge. You know, you got to make good impressions. Now, am I saying everyone has to be Boy Scouts and be perfect all the time? No. I mean, no, people will follow you. If you're a good player, they're going to follow you. And if you're a respected player, they're going to follow you. I guess what I'm saying is that by using the game theory, people are going to respect you more and faster than if you don't. And there's players I've played that talk all sorts of shit, and they're great players, and that's great. You know, and there's other players that talk shit and just don't have it all together yet. And that doesn't make them terrible not part of the community. It just means that they need to work on certain weaknesses. And if you can explain that to them and tell them, hey, this is something that I think you need to work on. Maybe you shouldn't talk shit at this point yet because you can't do this yet or something. You know, I don't know. But, you know, I'm not a fucking authority on what you should or shouldn't do at an event or with somebody. That's not my bag, okay? What I'm trying to say is that there's smarter ways to learn a fighting game and there's smarter ways to get better in a fighting game. You know, it was kind of a rant. I apologize. Please visit the game room. We are on Twitch. We are at twitch.tv/thelefty with an underscore between the and the lefty. We hope to see you soon. We do lots of giveaways and different prize pools for people that stick around and listen to us. And you guys have a great night, and we will talk to you soon.